This is an iHeart podcast.
OpenAI is a financial abomination, a thing that should not be, an aberration, a symbol of rot at the heart of Silicon Valley.
And I'm going to tell you why on my show Better Offline, the rudest show in the tech industry, where we're breaking down why OpenAI, along with other AI companies, are dead set on lying to your boss that they can take your job. I'm also going to be talking with the greatest minds in the industry about all the other ways the rich and powerful are ruining the computer. Listen to Better Offline on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you happen to get your podcasts.
Hey, and welcome to the Short Stuff. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's sitting in for Dave, and this is Short Stuff. And Chuck, I have come to really detest politics, in particular the American brand of zero-sum outrage politics that the entire nation's enmeshed in.
Yeah,
I try not to think about it.
Same.
Avoid politics as much as possible.
Same.
So let's get started about this political history story.
We're talking about Andrew Jackson and his first inauguration, or his inauguration, rather. They used to hold these in March, and his was held on March 4th, 1829. And what happened there at the Capitol was he gave a speech and did his thing. And what you should know about Andrew Jackson is he was a very populist president, some say the very first one. And people loved him. They were like, he's for the little people. And like, we want to go meet this guy on Inauguration Day. So he said, that's a great idea. George Washington held these levees at the White House, which is basically come and meet the first family on Inauguration Day. And I'm going to do the same. Big mistake.
Yeah, there's a just basically a legend of Andrew Jackson's inauguration in 1829 that they basically tore the roof off the White House. They partied so hard there.
Yeah.
And he didn't, but that was the thing. You mentioned he was a populist president. All of a sudden, because of him being a populist and the people who supported him, average everyday people who typically weren't into politics at all, suddenly overran Washington, D.C. in a very celebratory mood because Andrew Jackson had beaten the Washington establishment, the elites, John Quincy Adams. And now the people were truly represented in the American government as far as they were concerned.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There are historians that say, hold your water there. It may not have been as wild as everyone thinks. There's a guy named Daniel Feller who was a history professor at UT, Tennessee, Go Vols. I'll even say that as a Georgia fan. And he was the editor of the papers of Andrew Jackson. So he knows a thing or two. And he's like, you know what? They talk about people, you know, wrecking the place, people coming there with muddy boots and turning over tables and punch bowls. He said, take that with a grain of salt, because a lot of this stuff comes from the account of this woman named Margaret Baird Smith, who showed up like late to the party after this stuff had evidently happened.
She was tardy to the party.
Tardy to the party, and also did not like Andrew Jackson and his politics. So probably had a pretty heavy slant on the chaos she described.
Yeah, and this was, I mean, she was a good example of how the opposition to Andrew Jackson felt. Like they felt like they owned DC, and Andrew Jackson and his supporters didn't really belong there.
Right.
And yet, because Andrew Jackson had won the presidency, and these like average everyday people felt represented finally, they showed up. The question is, like, nobody's saying like that didn't happen.
Right.
It's the degree to which it happened. And Margaret Baird Smith's letters to her daughter in particular are essentially like one of a very few number of firsthand accounts. And she really did not like this and pretty much, I guess, blew it out of proportion is a really good way to put it.
Yeah, she writes about the majesty of the people disappearing and a mob of people of fighting and scrambling. And what a pity.
Yeah, she said it twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and is this a How Stuff Works article?
This is a Dave Ruse shorty special.
I should have known, because Dave mentions, like, you can almost hear Margaret clutching her pearls in this letter.
Very Dave line.
Right. So you said she was tardy to the party. She showed up a little bit after 3:00, and the reason she didn't go straight from the inauguration to the party is because she heard that there were these large crowds. The estimate that has been bandied about all these years later is that there were 20,000 people who showed up at the White House.
That's incredible.
To party. So I say we take a break and we come back and talk about what they say happened at this 20,000 person strong party at the White House.
Let's do it.
Are there any pictures of you online? I'm not just talking about Google. I'm talking anywhere.
Clearview scrapes together images from Facebook, from LinkedIn, from Venmo accounts.
That database is now being used by police departments all across the country to match criminal suspect photos. And sometimes it makes mistakes.
So in this one case, two of the search results that are, I think were in the top 10 of the search results were Michael Jordan, just a picture of Michael Jordan.
But cops are still using it to make arrests.
Police, they are trusting this software to lead them to the right suspect. But you're not even being told that it was used, let alone given any of the details about how it works.
This is not Minority Report. This is happening right now. People are getting arrested and doing actual time in jail after being picked out by a computer. I'm Dexter Thomas, host of Kill Switch, where every Wednesday we explain the right now of living in the future. You can turn off the computer, but do not let the computer turn you off. Listen to Kill Switch in the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
OpenAI is a financial abomination, a thing that should not be, an aberration, a symbol of rot at the heart of Silicon Valley. And I'm going to tell you why on my show Better Offline, the rudest show in the tech industry, where we're breaking down why OpenAI, along with other AI companies, are dead set on lying to your boss that they can take your job. I'm also going to be talking with the greatest minds in the industry about all the other ways the rich and powerful are ruining the computer. Listen to Better Offline on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you happen to get your podcasts.
So we said, Chuck, before we broke that there's about 20,000 people estimated to have been at the White House for Andrew Jackson's inauguration levee. That even Margaret Bayard said, or Bayard Smith said, that that was probably an exaggerated number.
Yeah.
She did say that there were some crazy things going on, though.
Yeah. Bloody noses, several $1,000s worth of glassware broken. But here's the thing. Some historians think she might have been exaggerating because she was just maybe a pearl clutcher and didn't like Jackson. There was a senator from Massachusetts named Daniel Webster who was not a fan of Jackson as well. But he wrote all about this day, and he didn't mention, like, all this chaos going on. He said, you know, people have come 500 miles to see General Jackson. They really seem to think the country is rescued from some dreadful danger. And he also said a lot of people were also there to like aspiring political politicos, I guess, trying to maybe get a job or get some influence.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote in pretty good depth about this. And he never mentioned, like, you know, a party where people were getting in fights and muddy boots and turning over tables.
Yeah, it was like he didn't mention that it turned into the infield at the Kentucky Derby.
Right. Yeah.
That is really significant because he was there, and to not mention, like, that people were just going berserk partying at the White House and trashing the place. I think that to me says volumes about it, that it happened a little bit, but it was so insignificant that Webster didn't even think it was worth mentioning, or that the whole thing was basically made up.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling it wasn't completely made up. I bet it got a little wild. And there are also people that say, like, you know, it sounds like there were probably people that maybe stood on tables and chairs to get a better look.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, maybe a table breaks when you're doing that. But she made it sound like they just trashed the place.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that not only did they trash the place, it wasn't just that there were 20,000 people or however many people were there, that they were just rowdy. She was basically trying to portray them as, again, people who didn't belong in Washington, let alone the White House. And look, yeah, you can't take these supporters of Andrew Jackson anywhere. Look at what they did. They rushed people carrying out the punch bowls to get punch and free cake. And they elbowed each other. It was like a Black Friday sale, essentially, is what Margaret Smith was describing. And again, just painting people in a very unflattering light. The problem is that was a letter to her daughter, right? So if her daughter was misled, or maybe she was even trying to entertain her daughter, who knows? It would be one thing. Historians would probably still have found those letters and be talking about it. But the reason why it became such a well-known thing is that the press picked that up too. And exactly like happens today, that exaggeration was run with to outrage people who were opponents of Andrew Jackson, because that completely satisfied their opinion of those people.
Yeah, here's a bit from the New York Spectator that was pretty colorful. Here was the corpulent epicure grunting and sweating for breath, the dandy wishing he had no toes, the tight-laced miss fearing her person might receive some permanently deforming impulse, the miser hunting for his pocketbook, the courtier looking for his watch, and the office seeker in an agony to reach the president.
Right.
What does that even mean?
I don't know the part about the dandy wishing he had no toes. I looked high and low for what that meant.
Maybe because they were getting stepped on so much?
Maybe.
I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of that made any sense.
The one I came up with is that maybe it was in fashion to have small feet.
Maybe. I know that The Dandy Has No Toes is a pretty great record title.
Yeah, for sure. One of the best
ever.
Talk about
a deep cut. Yeah.
So I guess in 1978, the Tennessee Historical Society, they roll up their sleeves and they're like, let's get to the bottom of this. And from their research, they actually said they considered it sheer bedlam.
Yeah.
But they turned up another account from a senator named James Hamilton of South Carolina, who was a supporter of Jackson's. And even he said that this was he called it a regular Saturnalia. But he also said that most of the damage was minimal. So somewhere in between there and Margaret Bayard Smith's account, it was probably the truth. And I think it was Daniel Webster who's probably the most reliable.
Yeah, I agree. But who knows? It's a fun story.
It is a fun story. And we love fun history stories. And I guess Chuck, short stuff is out?
Correct.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.